The wind's against us. Sometimes you think you had something done in it, and then you go to use it, and it's not there, and it doesn't work right. Amazing. Scripture reading is from Mark 6, 45 through 52. It's the story about Jesus walking on the water. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to Bathsheba, where he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountain to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take care, courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the winds died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves, and their hearts were hardened. What is truth? It's a big question. Is it something that is knowable? This morning I want to look at, are personal experiences part of truth? Last week and this week's reading, I want to look at as a personal experience. Each person that partook of a miracle of the feeding of the 7,000, and also this one, the disciples seeing Jesus walking upon the water, I want to relate to these stories as personal experiences that are hard to prove. And I'm going to start out by telling a story of myself. I've maybe related to this one somewhat a time or so before. But there was a time long ago, before Colleen and I started attending church, I would ask God for proof every now and then, for whatever reason. And I would always used to get some kind of experience of some sort. I have a list of experiences that I could tell, and I don't see myself as unique in any way. I think many of us have personal experiences that we're either afraid to say or don't want to say or don't know exactly how to say them, but I think all of us have had some type of personal experience that has deep meaning to us, and I've had several over the years. And so this is my last one that I asked God to show some kind of evidence. And I don't need no proof no more after this one. And I knew that I was really kind of going, I already knew that God existed and believed that there was proof of it. But I asked. And it started out, it had two parts. I was down south coming up through Virginia, into Virginia on 77, and I up at Wyattsville. I call it Wyattsville. It's Wittsville, some people call it. It all depends on where you put the accent. I got off there. There's numerous truck stops, and I got off one. There was a Wilco there, and I got off of the exit, and as I was going down the exit ramp, I had momentum, and I was shifting down to get ready to slow down to go and get off the exit ramp, and as I put it in the gear to drive out the exit, off the end of the exit ramp and make a right, as I put power to it, my drive shaft went ka-chunk, right in two. And so I still had enough of momentum, and I coasted off into the exit ramp on the berm, and I couldn't go anywhere. Obviously, I couldn't go anywhere, and I couldn't, the drive shaft didn't drop down, so I wasn't quite sure, so I put it in gear and went outside and looked, and sure, one part of it was turning, one part of it wasn't. And so, and this was the time before cell phones. So I had to walk off the exit over to the Wilco, and I asked the fuel attendant, that's when they were usually professional people, they knew a little something, more than they do now. I'm not trying to be, it seems like now we have young ones that don't, never mind. And Usually what happened was you would go to the fuel desk and there would be somebody local repair shop that they would know and they would give you your phone number. And of course they had one. And I called the guy up and I told him where I was and what happened to him. He said, I'll be right out. And I assumed that that meant 5 hours from now, 6 hours from now, sometime in the future. Well, it wasn't very long. He was out. And he looked at it and said, oh, yeah, we can fix that. I said, well, how long is it going to take? Oh, not very long. My buddy of mine owns has a lathe. We can make the drive shaft up right away. No problem. In less than a couple of hours, I was fixed and I was going down the road. Nearly an impossibility in my world. It doesn't happen very often. And so I said to God, okay, yeah, that was pretty good. But I want a little more. So later, about 2 weeks later, I was going out to Long Island. And I was driving out through there. And I all of a sudden, I hear this noise, like tin dragging on the road. I'm like, what the world is that? And I had went across through the Holland Tunnel, through Chinatown, and got on the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. And I was getting on the Long Island Expressway when this happened. Well, if anybody of you have been on in that area, there's no place to stop. There's just traffic, shoom, shoom, shoom. And I finally got pulled over right close to 295, the exit before 295. That's where you get on to get off the Throgs Neck Bridge and a little stretch there. And there was a long off ramp, and I got off there. Well, by now, I'm in really tense and wondering what's going to happen and all this kind of stuff. And I really didn't think that God was involved in any of this at this point yet. But I got out, walked around, and I, at the days gone by, I used to have what's called a Wabasco heater. It's a little mini furnace. I now have a little one under the bunk. They have advanced in technology, and now you don't need this big one on the side. Well, the bracket broke, and it fell on the ground. And it was hanging there, dragging on the ground, just by its heater hoses. That's it. I'm thinking, wow, that was a miracle that the heater, something didn't break, and I would have lost all my antifreeze, and that would have been. And so while I'm underneath there trying to fix it and trying to figure out, I got a strap, you know, one of these 20-foot long straps with a ratchet on it, and I'm trying to just make it small enough to hold this little box about this big on the side of my frame, and I'm down underneath the bunk here, and I'm working away, and all of a sudden I feel this hand on my shoulder. And I'm like, okay, well, I still got busy, and I felt it again. And I turned around, I turned like this, and I said, just a minute! And all the while, traffic is going by, and you know, I'm all wound up and worried. And after I got done strapping, I turned around, there wasn't anybody there. I looked up on the hill, and up between a gap between the trees, and there was a cross. A lighted cross. And one of them little square 4x4 box tube crosses. I felt at peace. I started laughing. I turned around and finished doing what I was doing. I felt really at peace. It was a peaceful feeling that came over me that I cannot explain. I got in my truck and I delivered. I could feel that presence of that hand on my shoulder for a long time, weeks after. And I just felt at peace, like everything was going to be okay. I didn't worry about things anymore nearly as much. We started attending church at Alba, and that cross hung up just the exact same one, except for little frillies that it had on in the plastic part of it. That it was the exact same cross, made the same way. Little box, square, lit it, same thing. It was an experience that I cannot prove to you. I can't, there is no evidence that it happened. I could have been just telling you a story. Are experiences such as that real? Do they have credibility in our lives? How do we go about proving them? The stories that I see here today are like that. How do you prove them? How do you prove that Jesus fed 5,000? What is the archaeological evidence of it? The same way on the boat. They had, in the midst of this great storm, you know, even in the midst of my great storm of trying to fix this thing and worrying about everything breaking down and all this, there was a peace that came over me. Isn't that what happened to the disciples? Archaeological evidence, in my case, may be able to find the old rusty bracket that broke, may find a corner that is ground off on the bracket and on my Wabasco 90S. But would it tell the story? Only I could tell the story. Only you can believe it or not believe it. Isn't this what Christian faith is about? Personal experiences that are real to each individual or to groups of people. I still, in some ways, even though I am well satisfied and understand, I don't understand. For as much as I know, I don't know. I don't always get things right. I don't always listen. I think listening is where it's at.
It's a pretty positive thing to know that you don't know.
That's probably true.
A lot of people don't know that they don't know. Knowing that you don't know is...
That's true. That's I think they say that's the beginning of wisdom. And the Proverbs have relate to that in some way.
The 12 steps that admitting you have a problem.
Do what?
The first of the 12 steps that admitting you have a problem.
Right. So, I understand that. I think not knowing is the beginning of knowing in some respect. And I've said this many times that for the one thing that I do understand, there's 10 more that I don't understand. And the depth of God's wisdom is so great. It's still a mystery. Even though I understand and have an understanding and I believe, there's still a mystery involved in it. For the longest time, I think the church, the history of the church is, we talked a little bit about out here in Sunday school, wanted to control the experience. You were believed what the church wanted you to believe through doctrine and dogma. Galileo, in the beginning of the split of science, away from the church and beginning to think and have an irrational, reasonable mind, was the beginning of the split. People began to think and to experience and to do experiments and to try to understand God in a different way. Do I think all scientists are atheists? No. I don't think so. So let's look at the text for a second and see what we can see. Jesus went up on a mountain. He dismissed, in the last couple stories, Jesus has been going back and forth across the Sea of Galilee in a boat. And he went up on a mountain to pray. And he sent his disciples across. I'll tell you another story, that a dream that I had in the past for several years. I've several times. Some dreams mean a lot. Some are just garbage. It's just scrambled up nothingness. And there's other dreams for me that have relevance and that I remember and have an impression upon my mind and that I still don't forget. And one of them is, periodically, two or three times anyway, I've had this dream that I would go up into a mountain and I would go around the mountain and I would remember going around the mountain, but at a certain point, I wouldn't remember no more. And I never did in any of the three dreams that I have about going to a mountain. The last time I came down off the mountain, again, I felt really peace. I felt peace that I cannot explain. So that dream has stuck into my mind. So, going up onto a mountain to me means that you're going into the spiritual realm. Going up into the mountain here is a spiritual understanding, the way I'm going to spiritualize the text is that Jesus went up into the spiritual realms. And yes, he went up into the mountain, but I'm going to correlate it or parallel it with in a spiritual understanding. So he ended up being in the spiritual realm, in the spiritual being. He's been transfigurated in some sense, as the word that's biblically used. He was changed in some way. This is what I believe. And that he saw them and he began to pray and to meditate. He became into a different state. I think in a lot of times in my experiences that you are in somewhat a different state of mind. You're both in the physical realm and you're in a spiritual realm at the same time for some reason. I don't claim to understand what happened and how it happens, but I just know it does happen. And I know many, many people here have had experiences some that they shared and some that they don't. And I see Jesus going up and being in this state of mind. And he could see in his spiritual mind the disciples out in the middle of the lake rowing and struggling in the boat. He said he could see them. So how could he see them? He didn't see them with his physical eyes. He saw them through his spiritual eyes and through his spiritual understanding. This is about a personal experience to the disciples and for Jesus and his disciples. And he said that they were out in the middle of the lake and they were all alone. And they were straining on the oars and the winds were blowing against us. Even though we have an understanding of God, the winds still blow against us. I still have to deal with troubles. Even though I have the comfort and the peace of understanding that there's more to life than just is here, I still struggle. The winds are against me. My truck breaks down even to this day. It's presently getting fixed down in Exton. Last 2 weeks we've been working on it. And Monday it should be done. I know these things happen. There's trouble comes in our lives. It's not going to be along the way. But one thing I do know, I have the peace that that will pass. I will pay that bill and I will drive the truck and it will go on. Things will go on. The peace that gives you a centeredness that, yes, in the midst of the storm, you have a centered comfortness. This is something the disciples didn't have. They didn't have this. They didn't have this centeredness, this peacefulness of something that they would survive. They were worried about getting drowned in the physical world. Even though they were Jesus' disciples, they still didn't have enough faith to believe that Jesus would save them. I mean, it's hard to understand. You would think that somebody who was that close to Jesus would have had an immense amount of faith, would have understood Jesus, and would have believed. But even they did. Even at the end of the passage, it says they didn't understand. They hardened their hearts. They didn't believe. Excuse me. And shortly before dawn. Now, anybody who knows anything about experiences and Native Americans and various different knows that dawn is a very powerful time. If you want to travel between time and space, that is traditionally the time that you want to do it. You can research it. That's what it generally is. That's why you see gargoyles catty cornered on the church steeples. That's when evil can penetrate. That's when the spiritual realm enters into the physical realm, is sought to believe. And it's a time of the split. So what I take shortly before dawn, meaning, and this is when Jesus decided to act. He knew it was a powerful time. And so he began walking across the lake in a spiritual form. They saw him spiritually. They had an experience of Jesus, probably as he really is. And they thought he was a ghost. They didn't see him as a spirit being. They didn't see him and understand at all. They cried out. And it almost says that Jesus was almost going to walk by them if they didn't cry out. I don't know how many people ever saw a ghost. I can't claim that one. Can I? In the barn, they're knocking, but I never saw nothing. Well, I might have saw haze, but that wasn't really for sure. But we used to have, our one farm used to be, it was haunted, they said. And you would go downstairs, and this was when I was a teenager, somewhere thereabouts. And you would hear this knocking upstairs, and if you go down, up above, it would go down and it would knock below. And I've actually heard it. And so, but I haven't actually seen a ghost. Can anybody claim they see a ghost? Yep, there you go.
Before I got married to my wife 20 years ago, her favorite grandparent appeared to me in a dream, and she never described him, and I could completely describe him. Yeah. Told me to take care of her.
See, many people have had experiences. Yeah. I'm not unique. I understand. I'm not unique in any way. Shane, you had some, yes.
When I was growing up, my grandfather had died when my mother was 10, and I saw him coming out of the bathroom and walking into her bedroom, and he would do it over and over again. And apparently that was his last trip before he passed away when she was 10, because he came out of the bathroom, went into his bedroom, and laid down and died.
Yeah.
But obviously he was dead way before I was born. I didn't know who it was. My mom saw him as well, so.
Yeah. And you believe this to be absolutely true. And there's no evidence that I can't dispute it other than your word. And that becomes a problem, Connie. Well, there is this idea that you can't. They do give off an odor. I've heard that story before.
Is it tobacco smoke or bacon when there's been no bacon in the house for weeks and months? Every once in a while, I swear the old fellas that at our house decide they want to make their presence known.
Yeah.
And you'll get an odor, clear as anything. But if nobody that's in the house or has been in the house.
Yeah. See, I don't laugh at these experiences. I hold them to be true. I mean, I have no... And for us to try to look at this text here and say, and try to define it through science, that it's impossible for Jesus to walk on the water. Well, some theories was that the water wasn't very deep, and you know it was shallow at the one end. And you can go read them all day long. Why would I want to try to disprove the story? I don't. It's a waste of time myself. It's an experience that what they're trying to describe in these two stories, the feeding of the 5,000 and this story, and there's some others I'm sure, is to say that personal experiences are relevant. That was one thing that I say. Your personal experience has relevance to you. It is true to you. It is truth to you. And yes? Yes, I think you go to a level in which you're in a spiritual realm in which your daily emotions are not necessarily present.
Right.
Yeah.
And it allows
yes.
this in. And some people say, well, it's because you're hallucinating. Well, in the native belief there is because your inhibitions have been dissipated. It allows the forces from the spirits to come in.
Be still and know, the Bible says. Be silent and listen. That this is what Jesus is teaching us. That them things that we can't do, which is in our present day world in which we are engulfed in, doesn't allow you to do that. It's a realm in which is yet to come. That's where we're going to go at some point in time, I certainly do believe. Anybody else want to share a story? Yes, Sharon.
I was coming home from work down in Baltimore one day, from Baltimore, and I couldn't be around Heather because it was an instant migraine. So it got to be a kind of contention between us. So whenever I came home, she would put the taboo up in front of it, you know, or. So anyway, this morning I was coming home from work down in Baltimore, and rush hour traffic started to about an hour and a half to home in the morning. I couldn't stay awake, and I was on 695, when all of a sudden I smelled this perfume. It's like, oh my God, it was like the whole house drenched in taboo. So I rolled down the window and I was sniffing outside, and I was trying to figure out where the heck is this perfume coming from. Nothing out on the highway, you know, nobody turned over a truck or anything, but the taboo perfume. And I rolled far back, and I rolled it back up. Instantaneous, it was really right in my face again. I said, okay, Mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things that you cannot explain under conventional science. Yes. Right. And I can't tell you that's wrong. I no one can. Yeah.
I've never snorted, for instance, at that one time, I was so tired that when I was coming off of that, and more than 18 hours, and I just couldn't keep my eyes open.
Yeah.
My brain was sleeping, but my eyes were, I just couldn't make any sense. I wasn't sleeping.
Another saying that I come up out of this whole process is someone is looking out for you. And I tell that to people, a lot of people, when they have good things happen to them or whatever, I say someone is looking out for you. I can remember when Dave Morris died. I don't know, most of us know. I still have that picture in Dave Morris, and in the spiritual realm, I see Dave standing there smiling, and I asked the pastor over there if other people have seen it. Seen Dave Morris after he passed away, and they said they have. There's a lot of people who saw him after he passed away. These are experiences, I think, that really take faith to believe, and for me has helped me along my life's journey, and I'm sure they have helped yours. Your mouth is opening. Okay, I'm sorry, Shane. Yes, Dan. Okay, there's two more, okay.
The day of Dave's funeral, all the whole family was stayed to the house there, all grandchildren and great grandchildren. They were out behind the house. I guess I was out there too. But it had rained just a little bit in the morning. And all at once there was a rainbow. Went right from one side of the house. You could see it from the backyard over and down the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their phones and that. They took a picture of it. And I have it hanging in the living room now.
Really?
Yeah, it blew up about that big.
And yeah.
It's definitely a rainbow. It went right from one side to the other. They said that with Grandma.
Yeah.
The
same thing happened with my dad, actually.
Yeah.
Right over the house as we're coming down the driveway. The
really?
Yeah. We always said that too. Well, my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Like a little bell rang and looked over and there was
dad
walking.
Yeah.
Well, I've had an experience 3 times since my husband died, and I get up and I go to every window and look out and can't find out anybody outside, but somebody's knocking on my house. I think it's Bob.
See, 3 is a spiritual number, so that's a very powerful number. There's powerful numbers.
It's happened 3 times and they knocked 3 times.
Really?
Just as plain as anything. Boy, it's weird. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
You're alone.
Yeah. So, and the disciples were terrified. They said that's what it says. They were terrified. Anybody else want to share?
Yeah, it just shows that maybe there is an afterlife and people do communicate with us.
Yes.
I think
I think the next realm is so close to us that, but yet so far away. I mean, we don't understand time and space to start off with, and so is the next realm right next to me, like all the time, or around us all the time? I can't really answer that. I don't know, and these are questions that are really. But yet, you believe them. We believe them in faith. We see our experiences as being real and true and truth. I see it as truth, a type of truth. Myself.
It's like when people see cardinals or dragonflies or something. Is it a hopeful feeling? I mean, we don't really have proof, but sometimes it does give me comfort just thinking, okay, that was so and so that.
Yeah. Yeah, we have all kinds of little different things that we, yeah. I think if you want to look for the truth of an afterlife, it's there. If you want to try to disprove it through empirical means, you are at your own demise, I think. And so that's only one tool in the whole shelf. I've said that more than once. I think there's more than empirically trying to prove and observe. Just because we can't reduplicate any of these experiences do not make them less relevant and less truthful. Anybody else want to share? The disciples were scared. They saw him and they were terrified in the whole process. And I can understand, I think, you know, the process. There are times when I've had experiences that were scary. They're not always, you know, they're frightening. You know, they're like Shirley says, it's scary, it's eerie. You're all by yourself and then somebody's knocking on the door. And you know, these are experiences that we we may like and can tell, but in this process while we were experiencing them, there's a certain amount of fear and terror in this whole process. For sure. I think so. So Jesus says to them, take courage. We are to take courage when we have these experiences. It's tough. It's tough. There's no question about it. It's tough. And he said, it is I. You know, it is Jesus. It's something greater than ourselves. It's Jesus. Don't be afraid. I mean, these are like really tough words when you're in the middle of these experiences. Take courage and don't be afraid. Jerry talked about you have to move them aside. And then he climbed into the boat, and suddenly the wind died down. You know, even though they were all amazed by this, the text says they didn't understand even about the loaves. And it says here their hearts were hardened. I think that's kind of a tough translation. I'm not going to say that the disciples were hardened like an unbelief. They were hardened in the fact that they just didn't understand. They just lacked understanding of it, and they were perplexed by it. I don't really like that type of translation. And I wrote down there, they didn't understand. Anybody else want to share something before I conclude? I think I'll just use Jesus' words to end. Take courage, Jesus says. It is I, and don't be afraid.